Good morning. It's good to see everyone. I want to thank many of you who have been holding down this piece of resistance against the empire for decades. It's so important that we do that all over the world where it is manifest. I think I was recalling that here was the first place where I ever got arrested. I was a college student a number of years ago, and my first, but not my last. So exactly 3 weeks ago today, at 12 noon, I arrived in Honduras. It was 36 hours after Berta Cáceres had been brutally murdered while sleeping in her bed in the middle of the night. Her left arm and her right leg were broken as she fought her attackers. Then she was shot in the forehead, death squad style. It was ironic that they had broken her arm, as she had been featured in a BBC News report several months earlier as the woman who twisted the arm of China, referring to the year-long protest she organized of her indigenous Lenca people against the building of one of the largest hydroelectric dams without the community's prior consent on the Rio Guadalquivir River, causing China and the World Bank to full financing of the illegal dam construction. This dam would have been used to divert water to gold mining projects and to be part of a regional energy network to transfer power out of the river to richer countries further north. Her killers shot her, an environmental activist, Gustavo Castro, to make sure that she would be doing no more arm twisting of international financiers and foreign investors, threatening the profits of the richest eight families in Honduras. I had never met Berta, and not even really known her name, but I had decided the very day we got news about her murder to go to the funeral, to be with those with whom we had been accompanying in Honduras. Father Ismael Melo Cotto, Jesuit, Father Cesar, Osman, Pedro Landa, Jennifer, faith activists who'd launched a campaign called Mother Earth, Our Common Home, bringing people of faith in alliance with the struggle to protect the indigenous peoples and the natural resources of Honduras. Berta had been their sister in the struggle. She was young, tireless, fearless, a force of intelligence and inspiration. In doing so, all these people that we knew had been putting their life at risk. Father Cesar said, "It's a miracle we're still alive to talk to you." We called our friends that morning and heard how utterly devastated they were by the tragic news. My friend Jose Artiga, director of the Share Foundation, said, "We should go to accompany them to the funeral, but we'll have to leave today." He said, "You know, yes, you could send a card or an email, but when you have a birthday party, or when the loss of a close family member, wouldn't you rather a friend come in person?" And so we did. And when we got there, we saw our friends devastated, exhausted, shell-shocked, confused, desanimados. They'd been roused in the middle of the night with the shocking news that Berta had been killed, even though the government had been ordered by the Organization of American States to protect her. Grieving, and yet they had to keep moving forward to be with the family, to organize a public repudiation, to gather the community, to plan the funeral. Perhaps this is what Jesus' friends and disciples, the people who were still alive, the witnesses, the survivors, might have been going through that Friday after his capture and death. As we drove the 4 hours to the mountain town of La Esperanza, Berta's hometown, for her wake and funeral, there was silence and hushed tones among her followers. Sadness, anger, and a creeping feeling of terror and fear was palpable. If they could do this to Berta, they would certainly do it to any of us. Fear and concern crept into their minds. It was hard to go to sleep, thinking of how the gunmen had barged into her house, they were extra vigilant. There was so little information as they tried to piece together what happened. The government had arrested one of Berta's colleagues, putting out accusations that someone from her own organization might have done it, seeking to discredit and sow internal discord among Copin, the organization she'd co-founded. The government was ignoring and washing its hands, even though they had failed to investigate the numerous death threats against her, and they had themselves trumped up charges of sedition against her months before, calling her a terrorist for dissuading foreign investment. Our friends remembered and recalled the other martyrs who had been killed, over 100 since the 2009 coup enabled by the United States and then Secretary Hillary Clinton. They said, remember when Alta Gracia was killed? Carlos Escalera, Tomas Garcia, Margarita Murillo, just in August of 2014. So many names I had never heard of. Martyrs of the land and river struggling so that their bienes naturales, their natural wonders of Honduras, could be shared and enjoyed by the majority of the Honduran people. Not transnational mining companies, hydroelectric power companies, or banana and palm oil plantation owners. Berta's murder, they said, was an ecological assassination, an attempt to silence her message, calling us that we heard today to wake up to the rapacious capitalism, militarism, racism, and patriarchy, guaranteeing our self-destruction. Her assassination was an attempt to silence her critique against empire, the Honduran and U.S. military, the corporate interests, the oligarchic political forces willing to privatize the whole country. She would not be quiet. Her assassination was an attempt to stop the organizing and awakening of the consciousness and power of the Lenca, Garifuna, and indigenous people of Honduras. When they realized that a small community of several thousand could stop one of the largest international dam projects with a year-long roadblock formed with rocks and prayers, families and farmers, they were emboldened and the resistance grew. They showed that it was possible to reverse the course of destruction and empire. I'd rather die here of hunger than migrate, more than one of them said. Berta was crucified. And like the crucifixion story on Good Friday about a poor Jewish peasant from Nazareth, an itinerant preacher, healer, and critic of empire, organizing to awaken the consciousness of a beaten down people, telling them that they had every right to challenge the forces that oppressed them, that they had every right to oppose the complicity and corruption of the establishment, that the kingdom of God was within them. Jesus' crucifixion, like Berta's, was meant to send a message, to be a public death, so as to quiet a discontent population. There were 12 forms of capital punishment, and any one of them could have been given to Jesus. But death by hanging, death by the cross, was special. It was reserved to be public for the purpose of instilling public terror, hanging as deterrent. Their hope was that by killing a leader, they could destroy an organization, a movement, an idea. Death as deterrent. Empire. The total control of all aspects of life is maintained and reinforced by acts of public terror. The public extrajudicial killings of Black lives, Michael Brown, Maya Hall, Eric Garner, Natasha McKenna, Alex Nieto, Sandra Bland, where Black and Brown bodies continue to be publicly executed on video cameras and then publicly exonerated with impunity. As if Black lives don't matter, are not sacred, seeks to maintain an empire based on white supremacy. Such acts of terror seek to frighten and terrorize entire communities. Now, as in the past 3 centuries in this country, as if to say, just stay in your place, keep quiet, or else. Empire. The militarized control and extraction of the land and water, the very essence of life, now has forced the extraction of people. Pastor Julian talked about not having a homeland anymore and coming to the only place that was radiation free. Whole communities which have been forced to leave, displaced by economic interests, corporate contamination, and other nations' wars over natural resources, are forced to abandon their homes and flee, extracted and exiled, with nothing but their labor and their bodies to sell, vulnerable to exploitation and abuse. Just for a little piece of land. This is what one of the leaders we met 3 weeks ago, Orvelina, told me. She said, she broke it down very simply. She said, we want to go to school, but we can't. We want to eat, but there's not enough. We want to grow our own food, but there is no land. We start organizing for opportunity and a different future. And then they start to threaten you with assassination. And then you're forced to leave your country before they kill you. I was disturbed to hear that a week after Berta's death, Orbelina was taken into police custody, where she still is today. Now the very lifeblood of a nation, its people, those who for millennia have been connected to the land, who love and care for it, are also commodified by empire. Instead of being welcomed as refugees, they're seen as a national security threat, subjected to the public terror of death on a rubber dinghy boat over the stormy Mediterranean, or death by bandits on the top of the trains, or death by desert. One Arizona desert lover told me they have even turned the beautiful spiritual desert into a weapon. Death is a deterrent, so more do not try to come, they say. The public terror of ice boxes in the detention centers, roadblocks, and checkpoints in Mexico, funded by us, raids deporting families and children to some of the most dangerous countries in the world, detention for asylum seekers who must pay $15,000 in bond to get released, 60-foot-high wall across the southern border that has cost $4.14 million per mile to build, the deportations of 63,000 Hondurans, 90,000 Guatemalans, including 7,000 underage minors last year alone. Empire maintains itself through public acts of terror like Nagasaki and Hiroshima, atomic and nuclear weapons used to threaten and bully our way, to get other nations to host our bases, ally in our wars, open their nations to our economic policies, bending to our wishes, or else. This, just on the other side of this fence, Lawrence Livermore National Weapons Lab, shrine to war, to the god of national security, where more terrifying weapons are dreamed up to achieve what US the military calls full spectrum dominance, control of the air, the sea, the land, and space, and its control all the elements of life. These acts of public terror are not spun out of small terror cells, but out of the shiny, clean corporate buildings with innocuous sounding names, with a budget of $1.5 billion annually and nearly 6,000 high-paid employees to develop new systems to maintain empire that poisons rivers, creates displacements, refugees, and death. But death, we know, is not the final word, or you wouldn't be here year after year. They try death as deterrent, but migrants are not deterred when the root causes are left unattended. As Somali-born poet Warsan Shire says, no one puts a child in a boat unless the water is safer than the land. Along the migrant trail through Guatemala and Mexico, at migrant shelters we visited, we saw families and individuals who are allowed to rest and recuperate and restore their dignity. And in about 3 days, they're ready to go again. They try death as deterrent, but the people of Honduras are not deterred. Thousands upon thousands of people came to Berta's funeral, traveling on buses for hours. Mothers and fathers and children with threadbare shoes, weathered faces, calloused hands, and their Sunday sombrero. for 72 hours of viewing her body and sitting in wake outside her home. And by the third day, they were in the street, defiant and organized, denouncing not just this assassination, but also the assassination of hunger, the assassination of poverty, the assassination of migration, saying that the love of God is not stopped because of this violence. We cannot let fear dominate. As long as we don't have fear, we live, and they do not win. They fear us, this was Berta saying, they fear us because we are fearless. And from the Garifuna community, I'm not afraid to die because I know others will carry on the struggle. They try death as a deterrent, but we won't be deterred, will we?
No.
We'll not be deterred by fear. We will not be deterred by cynicism. We'll not be paralyzed, immobilized, numb. We'll not shut up. We'll not be deterred by lack of hope that change will someday come. There are three things I want to share with you that will help us to find hope if you're not feeling it this morning. The first is a trait that I heard people say about Berta. She said she was so stubborn. So stubbornness. Stubbornness is a virtue. Stubborn for justice. There's a lot of you who are out there who are stubborn. This has been going on since 1981, 1982, when 1,300 people were arrested here. So be stubborn. Be the splinter in the foot. Be the grass that comes up through the crack in the concrete. We're going to sing a song about that later. The grass through the cracks. The second thing about Berta is that she remained deeply and spiritually connected to the sacred land and water. All who came to Rio Blanco to help, she said, first you have to go visit the river. You have to understand the depth of connection and the spirit undergirding this movement. Come see the river, she would say. This is why we do this. This is what sustains us. Most of us here are migrants to California, migrants to this continent. So we have to work extra hard to know and to be deeply connected to this land, and to know that there is a sacred river, a sacred story, the sacred blood and bones of the Chochenyo Ohlone ancestors of this land. It is our duty, and it is our obligation to love this land fiercely and those to whom it belongs. The third thing is that we must accompany the victims of systematic injustice who are still alive. The survivors, the witnesses. Whether it's Black Lives Matter, whether it's the Muslims in our community, whether it's the immigrants who have come here displaced by empire. Here in the Bay Area, the least we can do is displace those impacted by our structural violence, which is what we are asking people here in the Bay Area to do with the immigrant community, to provide sanctuary, to provide accompaniment. Just this week, I received three requests for accompaniment. One is a 48-year-old Guatemalan man who was detained. He's terrified to be returned to Guatemala, but the judge won't release him unless there is an accompaniment team to welcome him and to support him. I received a call about a 17-year-old who's been sleeping on someone's floor, who has not been fed dinner since he arrived several months ago. A 19-year-old mother with a 1-year-old baby who escaped from El Salvador. I believe that accompanying and walking with, we can catch a bit of the hope and resilience that has brought them this far, because hope is contagious. By acting and doing, we begin to move again. We begin to hope and find the ganas, the chutzpah, the audacity to resume the struggle. Even with a tiny kernel of hope, we remind ourselves how to be profoundly spiritual, revolutionary, and humane, in spite of and in the shadow of the incredible challenges and circumstances facing the world. We remind ourselves of what we cherish and what we dream, outlined in the scripture in Isaiah, houses for people to live in, land for people to plant and eat their own fruit, to be able to feed their own children the riches of the earth, to not work in vain, but to work to better humanity and the earth, bearing children to a world of hope, not horror. We, my friends, are the seeds of hope, and we will pass around some poppy seeds, some of the smallest of seeds that are out there, California poppies. We are the precious seeds, like the seeds brought by African slaves from the continent, the seeds of medicine, the seeds of sustenance, the seeds of spirit, with the potential to multiply into thousands more. One last saying that Berta said, that they were saying about Berta, was Berta was not buried. She was planted. She was planted to continue bringing hope and an example of struggle and dignity. And as Oscar Romero said, may my blood be the seed of freedom. May we too be planted.